Hello everyone and welcome to our second Educators Collaborative call. This is Thea Carlson. I'm the Director of Programs with the Biodynamic Association. And we have about 15 people on the call right now. As I think you all know, this is the second call we've had with the Educators Collaborative. The first one was in March. And just want to do a quick poll. If you participated in the call in March, please press 1 on your dial pad. And if you this is your first Educators Collaborative call, please press 2. It looks like we're about evenly split. About half the people were on in March and half the people, this is their first call. So that's great. We're not, you know, intending that you have to go to one to participate in this one, but there always will be threads that go through it. So it's just nice to know that we have, looks like we have 6 people who participated in the call in March and 8 people who this is their first call. So this is one of the main activities so far of the Biodynamic Educators Collaborative, and we're really excited about it. It seems like people have been enjoying interacting in this way, in addition to reading each other's responses to the questions that we asked you when you joined. And I just want to recognize the role of our education leadership team in forming and guiding the growth of the Educators Collaborative. That's Corey Eichmann, Rachel Snyder, and Laura Riccardi-Livers. We asked them in the fall of 2012 to help the Biodynamic Association envision our educational work and especially help form this collaborative. And so they've been really helpful in kind of figuring out how to move it forward. And they also, we talked about how as the Educators Collaborative grows, we really want this be a participatory group where everyone feels responsible for it, and over time leadership rotates. So we just all wanted to acknowledge their role and also let you all know that at some point in the future we'll be looking to rotate leadership among this group so that it's really held by everyone who's part of it. So today we have a guest presenter and facilitator, Leah Walker, and we'll be doing a couple different exercises that she's going to lead us through in pairs later on the call. So I'm going to ask Leah to introduce herself, and then we'll run and have everyone else introduce themselves so we all know who we're sharing this space with.
Hi, everyone. This is Leah. Thank you, Thea. Briefly, just a few things about me. I'm a counselor. I have a private practice. I've done that for forever, and it feels like 20 years, something like that. I'm also formally trained in biography work. I am a faculty member of the 3-year part-time training offered by the Center for Biography and Social Art. They have a website. That's a place you could go for more information. I have a relationship to biodynamics that began with, I think, I would say, meeting Günter Hauck many years ago. He gave a talk at our local Waldorf school. We were in the recital hall, tall ceiling, wood floor, lasured walls, and many of you, I'm sure, know Günter. He's gray hair, glasses, German, speaks English with a German accent, and he was giving a presentation on the social organization of the bee, as I recall, and he happened to say, "We will not be healthy socially until our food itself supplies the necessary soul spiritual forces needed for social well-being," something like that. And I was just really hooked by that. I couldn't help but then feel that there's an inextricable link between my work with people and the work of others with the land. And so it's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to hearing a little bit about you.
Oh, thanks, Leah. So now if we can all imagine that we're together in a room and sitting in a circle. Of course, we're all over the place, but since we can't see each other, I'm just going to guide us all around this circle in the room, calling each person's name. And so when you hear your name, I'll turn your mic on. Right now, everyone's muted, so we don't have a lot of background noise. But I'll turn your mic on, and if you could just say where you're calling from and if you have an organization or firm that you're associated with. And when we get into smaller groups, you'll have a chance to talk more with your partners in the two different exercises. So right now, please just keep it to where you're from and if you have an organization or firm. So I'm going to start with Sally Voris. You're the first person on my list.
Well, okay, Thea. This is Sally Voris. I'm from Tawnytown, Maryland, which is near Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and I own and manage White Rose Farm.
Corey Eichmann.
Hi, I'm Corey Eichmann. I live in Durham, Ontario, and I farm Sogging River CSA.
Rachel Schneider.
Hi, everybody. My name's Rachel Schneider. I'm from Harlemville, New York, and I facilitate the educational programs for Hawthorne Valley Farm.
Raymond Miller, or Brad, you like to be called, right?
Yeah, thanks, Leah. Hello, everyone. This is Brad. I'm at Wilton, New Hampshire, and at the High Mowing School, and I teach horticulture here and life science, and then kind of the farm program.
Thomas Romer.
Hi, I'm calling from Pennsylvania near the Lehigh River on the east side. I'm currently trying to start a new home with a biodynamic garden and have become connected with farm-based educators inspired by anthroposophy. I was recently working at Camp Hill Village, Kimberton Hills, on their dairy farm.
Rosemary Taylor.
Hi there. I'm living here in Ottawa. That's Canada. And I help out at a Nanny Goat Hill community garden, as well as the Good Food Market that uses the space at the Nanny Goat Hill garden to sell local produce.
Elaine Norden.
Hi, I'm from Arden, Ontario, which is between Peterborough and Ottawa, and we own and operate Elm Tree Farm, which is biodynamic, and so hi, everyone.
Bruno Folador.
Hello, I'm Bruno. I'm calling from São Paulo, Brazil at the moment, but I'm working with the Nature Institute, especially with chromatography and composting projects.
Daphne Emery.
Hi, I'm calling from Napa, California, and I work with regenerative systems.
Robert King.
Hi, I live in southeastern Vermont in Putney, and I've been working for a number of years as an educator in gardening, teaching growing, preserving, and more recently cooking classes for beginning gardeners.
Martha Loving.
Hi, everyone. I'm grateful to be here with you. I am in Vermont in the Charlotte Burlington area, and I'm working with Living Well Residential Home. It's the first and only holistic residential care home in the state of Vermont, and we do a farm-to-table program here, and I'm a painting therapist and artist working with the elders here and also in Bristol. We have two campuses, and I've been teaching color and meditation through the color painting therapy work and Gertian studies work for probably about 20 years.
Megan Durney.
Hi, everyone. I'm here in Fair Oaks, California at Raphael Garden and a biodynamic educational center, and I'm also associated with the Pfeiffer Center out in Chestnut Ridge, New York.
Karen Davis Brown.
Hi, I'm in the Nashville area, and I work with the Horticultural Training Program at the Center for Living and Learning near Franklin, Tennessee, and the Hermitage Hotel Sustainable Farm Project.
Lloyd Nelson.
Hi, I live in Paonia, Colorado, and I own and operate a biodynamic spray and consult service.
Laura Riccardi-Livers.
We're just doing a quick intro. I had trouble getting
yeah,
on
just
here.
Where you're from and what you're, if you're associated with an organization.
Okay. In Kentucky, central Kentucky, and I work with Fox Hollow Farm, and also have a little business called BioAg Resources Making Preps.
Heather.
Hi, I'm Heather Toma, and I'm farming on Manitoulin Island in the north shore of Lake Huron in northern Ontario at Loon Song Garden.
Matthew.
Yes, my name is Matthew Buchner, and I manage the biodynamic program at Taw's Winery here in the Niagara region of Ontario, Canada.
Henning.
Yes, hello. My wife and I'm Henning Samstoff, and my wife and I have been farming biodynamically here on Locust Island, that's in Washington State, since 1970, and I'm a mentor under the NAPTAP program.
Great. Thanks, everyone, for sharing who you are. If anyone didn't get to introduce themselves, please press 1 on your keypad, but I think we got everybody. And if at any point during the call you're having any trouble hearing or anything like that, you can also press 1 and I'll try to help you figure it out. But without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Leah for her presentation. And
thanks again, Thea. Thank you, everyone. This is really quite extraordinary, I think, that to gather this way. I suppose it'll become more and more common, but what an imagination that is to see us spread all around, even in the southern hemisphere. Yeah. So perhaps that's a good little bit of a lead-in into the idea of looking at our increasing individuality in our time, whether we learn that from student Rudolf Steiner's work or whether we feel it, as I do, almost on a daily basis. It's, you know, it's something that's occurring in our time. Like all things that Rudolf Steiner offered, biography work is meant to meet our needs in our time and in the future. So this increasing individuality that we hear is making it, for many of us, harder and harder to understand one another. I often say harder and harder to find each other. We all know the experience, I think, of not even meeting with other people's eyes in public places or the common hellos and chatting with one another doesn't happen in coffee shops and on buses and things like that. Paradoxically, there's a real upside to our individuality, of course, and that is that we are growing, I think, more and more clear about that we have, all of us, a unique task or contribution to make in our lifetimes, and trying to identify that can be actually a part of our path, the very exploration that we do on a regular basis of what is it is mine to bring. For many young people especially, there's this question, what is it that I'm supposed to do in my life? And most of us have experiences early on of that, finding ourselves in that search in one way or another.
So you could say that biography work is for perceiving, meeting, developing, coping with our individuality collectively, perhaps. It's for developing social understanding as well as greater self-understanding. I think for many, many people today, self-development, especially I think of in our circles when we work with anthroposophy, that we recognize the value of self-development as well as that of community building, both being vital for our time, both going hand in hand. For me, the question is, how will it be in the future between us and among us, and what can we do? Contribute to a future that's hopeful. In my work, I lead people through nature observation exercises often, trying to perceive sprouting, growing, flowering, seeding, decaying. We work with the seasons of the human life and use the seasons themselves as metaphor, the springing of childhood, the autumn of middle age. We look at the planetary influences, which are indicated in the lecture that I suggested or pointed to, and all these things I know are familiar to you as farmers and gardeners. So as I prepared this and talked with Thea and others about this, I kept saying, I think I'll be singing to the choir. I'll just be singing to the choir. My perception is that you all get the laws of life and death and growth and change, the universality of such laws, as well as the truth of the nature of individuality for any given living being, just as a farm or a garden has its individuality. We work with that in the human life within the context of universal laws. So I hope that rings a bell. And helps us find common ground here as much as more so than the feeling that I have of singing to the choir. I decided to try to hearken back a little bit to what Corey offered, and certainly that's being on the first call would not be necessary for where I go from here, but Corey sparked my interest by referring to the learning processes per step. I'm sure that's familiar to many of you, or all of you, perceiving, relating, digesting, individualizing, practicing, maintaining, creating. So those have that process we can look at in any given learning experience or any given event. It also exists over the lifetime. That's something that you can superimpose over the human life, again, kind of referring to universal laws. So, what we meet in life, observe, relate to, what we're able to take into ourselves and digest and integrate, inwardly, outwardly, all of these become who we are, make us who we are as individuals. I know we all know that early in life the natural process of learning leads us to see ourselves in particular ways, typically, and leads us to pursue particular interests. And oftentimes in young adulthood, there's sort of an awakening to where we've been placed out of our lineage and out of our education and our parents and our social economic background. And again, for many of us, early in adulthood, there can be that time where we recognize certain ways that we have been formed and also wake up to ways that we actually would like to reform ourselves or liberate ourselves. And this points to those last couple of paragraphs in that lecture about the interweaving of necessity and freedom, the work of the destiny-determining planets and the destiny-liberating planets, the inner planets and the outer planets. The sun years, as I refer to them, 21 to 42, correspond to
individualizing as an archetypal process in the human life, and of course then again referring back to a particular kind of learning. In the sun years, there's an interweaving of necessity and freedom. I try to put it in more common language. We can look at what we do naturally out of kind of a repeated pattern, even something that we feel we must do or we can't help doing. That's a part of being human, as well as we also recognize those things in us that we long to develop and create. I hope that rings a bell with all of you. Those things in us, especially again in young adulthood, that live with us as potential, that can be met as sort of a joyful opening, or from that lecture, Rudolf Steiner suggests it's potential that lives there with us as the possibility of flaming brilliance, which we can all hope to have those moments, or when we look back over our lives, we find those moments sometimes when we're really who we are as individuals. So what I thought we would do, and here Theo will work to make it happen in terms of the technology, is that we'll speak to us each other in pairs and take up a question that has to do with young adulthood. Think back to when you were 21 and 28. There may actually, I might have asked if there was anyone who's on the call who's not yet 28. And if that's the case, then perhaps choose 18 and 21. So I'll go on with 21 and 28, but if you haven't yet reached 28, go with 18 and 21, or 16 and 21 would work nicely too. So I'm thinking of reflecting in the realm of your work and education as you met it as a young adult, and fill in the blank for one another in your small groups. First, start with when I was 21, and then just let yourself describe relative to your work or your education or your interests, those things that you were taking up at 21, just tell your partner about what you were doing, what you were interested in then, what was your first work experience or what have you. So when I was 21, and then do the same thing with when I was 28 with regard to your work or your education or your interests. Just freely tell one another. I guess we'll have two or three minutes each in the sharing. Can you help with that, Thea?
We have a total of 15 minutes for this, so it would be about seven and a half minutes per person. So I guess people could... Do you want people to kind of go each do 21 and then each do 28, or do both, or does it matter?
That sounds really good. So each could go about 3 minutes on 21, and then, 3 or 4 minutes on 21 for each, and then 3 or 4 minutes on 28 for each. Does that work?
Math-wise? Yep, that sounds good. So So for those who haven't done this before, basically you're in a breakout group with one other person now, and so they'll be able to hear you, but nobody else can hear you. And when I'll sound a little bell when we start, and then I'll sound another bell after 7 minutes, which will be halfway through the time. So then if you haven't gotten to the 28, that would be the signal to move on to that. And then I'll sound the bell again when we move back into the group, and then we'll do the second part. All right.
Hi, everyone. I may be interrupting a couple of you. Leah. At this point, we'd like to come back to the full group and just for a few minutes, 5 minutes or so, I would ask just for reflections from you about some observations in that sharing, What did you notice about yourself? What did you notice about the process? What did you notice about 21 and 28? Any interesting revelations?
So if anyone has something that they'd like to share, just press 1 on your keypad, and then I'll call on you and turn your microphone on so everyone can hear you. Elaine.
Hi. I thought it was pretty interesting talking about 21 and 28. Both those years were great years. They're not all great, but 21 and 28 were transitional years. And I was noticing how the present really, as we were talking, noticing how the present really connected. There was an analogy there to the 21 and 28 for both of us right now. And so that was pretty revolutionizing to discover that.
Mm-hmm. Can you, Elaine, would you maybe say more about the transitioning that you noticed, the quality of that, or?
The transitioning
say
for,
more?
For now?
I
yeah,
think you used
both
that
wanted...
word about 21 and 28, of you noticed there's a transitioning there.
Yeah, there was a transitioning time at both 21 and 28, and both of us felt like now is as well. We really want to get much more immersed into spirituality and to being much more present on the land and being able to deepen our connections with nature and the world and community as well. So. Yeah, I think that was the part that really hit home.
Thank you. Anybody else have an observation?
Like Lloyd has his hand up.
Hi. I just see those years, especially when I said it out loud, how incredibly pivotal those years were for my work in meeting biodynamics and really just like the super importance of like what happened in my life to put me on my destiny path and to lead me to where I am now is really, really incredible to look at those times, particularly as some of like the times of the biggest changes in my entire life and life path. Self-reflection, and then in the other, I also, you know, in the observation of speaking with the other, it was just that, again, those were those critical moments where, like, especially the 28 of going through this inward process of change and of seeking, you know, something new, or the transition, the knowing that that was the time of the transition and not knowing what that was going to be, but that was the transition gate.
Mm. That's really great. Seeking something new and not knowing what that is. But stepping through anyways, right? Yeah. Stepping into. Nice, thank you. We have time for another one or two. Anybody else want to?
Sally.
Well, I guess I have two things that I'd like to share. Number one, I'm like 62 now, so I haven't thought about 21 and 28 in a long time. But it was really, my life has been like chapter after chapter after chapter. And so to see those chapters opening, it kind of, it's like the long view of the path that I've taken. And that's the first reflection. The second is I really got to get a sense of my partner, Tom, much better, even though we're talking by phone on a conference call and we can't see each other, we were still able to share in a way that I understand him better now, which I really value.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Sally.
And Robert.
Yeah.
Yes, what struck me in the turning point of 21, that's when higher education was finished. We were finishing college undergraduate degrees, and then in the past you would have had your apprenticeship time to become the master. What was shocking is that what we set out to do as a to become a master was completely different. And the gentle surprise for me was to end up as a biodynamic gardener at 28, not a college professor. And that was the gentle hand of destiny that moved me in that way. So I learned to trust that at that age, to be open to what the gentle hand was moving us towards and to be receptive.
Thank you. So my thought was to shift gears just a little bit now, knowing that you are educators within biodynamics, that that's what pulls you together as a group. I wanted to speak to the use of biography work in working with others, no matter what your subject matter is, that biography can have a place. That I appreciate what you shared. You already touched on a few qualities of 21, 28, transitioning, stepping through a gate, a gentle hand that's guiding you, all beautiful images of something that happens for all of us that would be this archetypal or universal picture that then we experience as individuals in our own very individual way. So that question that I brought to you just now, you'll notice that I prefaced it by asking you to think about work and education and your interests at the time. I call that narrowing the field, so that when I ask somebody to talk about when you were 21, when you were 28, that then there's a place for them to go and to land on. It's important for group work oftentimes. I'm sure that you would probably recognize that as educators yourself. It also helps the individual actually come to something more readily, I suppose. So along those lines, I wanted to point to a couple of other things that you might find useful in considering using biography in your educational process with the people that you work with. And there are, you know, just hundreds of things that I might say, but I thought I'd just pick out a couple of things that are key to me. And one of those is birth moments. I tend to be interested in birth moments of things like work or education, particularly in relationships, and also observation skills, which also, that leads me back to this idea of singing to the choir, sort of, but just when I work with individuals, I hope that in work, looking at our own lives, we can begin to see that metamorphosis exists there too. And again, you all actually pointed to that, the few of you that shared a little bit of seeing that 21 to 28, what can change and develop. And just that what you, again, what I imagine that you're skilled at as farmers and gardeners, this observation, the role of observation in biography work is equally important. Sometimes I say that with real estate, there's the saying location, location, location. In biography work, for me, it's describe, describe, describe. And that is, I'm hearkening back to the role of observation. If we can look at our own lives through this through description, through a descriptive lens, then that actually frees something up, I would say. Something that, in my experience with a little bit of nature observation, I work quite a lot with the life trees, that the more I will work with my observation skills of the tree, then there's something that can speak to me from the tree. I hope that, again, resonates with you. So I thought this question, you could use the question that I just offered you when I was 21, when I was 28. I wanted to bring another question for you to answer yourselves, do your own biography work, but it could live as an example of something that you could bring to others that you're working with. It would have to do with a birth moment. It would have to do with trying to hone some observation skills. So my question is this time, it's really a statement this way, describe the setting of the moment when you first met someone who is important to you now. So that's my question for you to take into your pairs this time. You'll think about someone who's important to you in your life now and go back to the moment when you first met them, if you can remember that, a very early experience with this person that is important to you. And then when you find that moment, describe for your partner what's there. Describe the room you're in or the location that you're in, the time of day. Try to describe it as if your listener were blind. You could use a few other sensory cues, like if there was a certain smell or temperature or, the quality of the light, anything that comes to mind that lets you describe this moment. And you could include what this person looks like, what you look like, what you're wearing, anything that allows your listener to build up a picture of this moment in your life when you met someone who was important to you. So maybe that's enough said. If there are questions, then like Thea said, then hit one so that we know that you have questions about it. And otherwise, she's going to put you into groups of two again so that you can. And I guess this one, again, will be about 3 minutes each. Thea, do we have another?
We have another 15 minutes total for this. So for most people, that could be up to like 7 minutes each. We do have one group of three people because we have an odd number now. Rachel, Matthew, and Henning are in a group of three, so you'll have a little bit less time per person.
Okay. I think that's ample time for the pairs, and I would actually even think in terms of maybe 4 minutes each, because you'll be surprised mm-hmm. how quickly the time will go. And good. Yeah.
Okay. So again, when you're ready, and we'll sound a bell when we're halfway through the time, and again, a minute before we're done.
Hi again, everyone. It's Leah. So we'll come back again to the full group and maybe wrap up your last sentence. So like we did before, are there reflections, observations that you have, things that you might like to share with the group, discoveries? You do the same thing that Thea asked before, is to press 1 on your keypad. Particular question I would have is, how was it to try to work with the setting of this meeting? Were you able to build up a picture for your listener?
Okay, Corey.
One thing that was really interesting about the exercise is, and it's something that I thought of before, but how, you know, whenever you ask someone about a memory, and I thought my own memories, that they end up seeming like imaginations, that, you know, the certain things that stand out as the memory are things that have spoken as like an imagination of that karmic relationship that's quite powerful, and it's always interesting to share that and hear other people's. So thanks for the opportunity.
Martha.
Yes. Well, I had a good time with this. And there wasn't a doubt in my mind who the important person was, and it was my daughter. And I was able to speak about the birth experience as well as, you know, different aspects of that. And even knowing that we knew each other in a past life. She was my mother in a past life. And knowing that she's also doing biodynamics now in, you know, Virginia, and I'm in Vermont. It's an interesting destiny path to share.
Rosemary.
Thank you. I just wanted to share the value of the spoken word. Those memories came alive again, and just by sharing them and speaking them, and it allowed me to hold that memory at a deeper level than I had known about it before, just by speaking it out. And the other insight that I had was that even though I was talking with Bruno at the furthest part of Brazil, and I was in the most northerly, almost the most northerly other end of the whole circle that we're in now, it everything was in instant time, and that didn't matter about space.
Rachel.
I was going to say that a couple of things have already been said. One thing that is to answer your question, I found it difficult to try to reduce the images to because of the time restraint. And when you have a strong memory, you could probably describe, you know, every beam and every of the wall, you know, of this, of the framing the windows and every part of the kitchen that you're talking about. And but it was hard to find the exact part of that memory and picture that would characterize and strike it home, and got very quickly paint a few of those to try to bring it forward. So I found that hard, actually, to decide what to say and what to leave out. I think because our memories, when they're strong like that, it's the whole picture all at once, and you have to say it and describe it in parts. So that was one thing. I think that my colleagues, I had two of them, did a wonderful job. I certainly saw some things in what they were both were saying. And I felt where we came around was also a birth moment it was a very strong image from one of the colleagues who used a birth of his daughter. So, and it brought out the kind of timeless quality about birth. It's not sort of not in time or space in a certain way. I don't know. And it's an in-between place. That was what came up for me.
Lloyd.
Thanks. I think I was impressed when just telling my part of the story of how vivid that memory is. Even the first meeting of just meeting someone just by passing by them and seeing, just looking into their eyes, and how incredibly vivid that memory is. And then I also was very, you know, I was interested to see what a recollection that my partner had, and how vivid of a picture she was able to paint in her meeting a significant person that really was a huge influence in her life. And I think, yeah, it was really powerful just to be able to visualize that just through hearing from this and so far away.
I'm curious if anyone has found in the picture that you created of this birth moment, if there's a quality or something about that that lives in the relationship as you know it now with this person that's important to you now? In other words, is there any sort of birth signature that you could see in what you described? And that may lead us back into a story, but I wonder if anyone has an observation of that nature, or if that's been part of your experience just now.
Sally, thanks for offering to share.
Well, I'm stretching a little bit, but it's good to stretch. So my experience is with these birth moments, it's almost like a new room opens, or a new room. For me, it's a room. And I want to connect that with the reading that we did specifically about Venus. For me, is a very, probably the most important planet. So that inward space that Venus holds, if I'm understanding it correctly. And so there's like another inward room opens. And so that's what I wanted to share.
In that, Sally, if I may, in the image that you created from your memory of trying to build up that picture, then that becomes sort of a room, a space within. Is that, am I understanding you?
I understood your question to be the birth moment, and does the birth moment live on in the relationship with the person? Was I understanding your question correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And so for me, that birth moment is like entering a new room.
Mm-hmm.
And so now there's another room in my inner house.
Mm.
And that room, and I was especially impressed with the Venus description, because my house is a very inward house. And so I can appreciate that it's kind of like a Venus. It's like another opening of another room,
mm-hmm.
an inner room that this birth moment has for me. Is that?
Yeah, it's lovely for me, Sally. I hope that it speaks to others. Perhaps it does that. I suppose because of working with biography and other people, it's often that to find a space within where, kind of using that as a metaphor, what you've described, it's beautiful imagery for the space within which we hold ourselves, or we hold others, or we meet others. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm
Brad,
curious.
You had raised your hand too. Oh, go ahead. Leah, what did you want to say?
No, that's all right. Let's hear from Brad. That's great.
Just to follow up with what you were asking me, if it continues, I was sharing with Thomas, mine is a pre-birth experience for my son with me, and then the communication was something that at the time, I didn't have words for it, or any experience or reading or knowledge from anyone else. So it was something I kind of held as my ability to communicate or to reach and have it. It was more ego-driven. And it was later, speaking to Kuhn Van Houten, where when I was trying to doing some biography and destiny learning with him, where I was kind of articulating that I was like, what would I do with this gift that I have? And he kind of smiled and kind of laughed and said, it was actually the way that he saw it, it was that actually was my son's destiny reaching out to me, and then I just heard it. And then with raising my child and our experiences, sometimes I get into that role of I'm the parent and I know what's best in this relationship. And then those words come back, or that feeling comes back, and I forget that he's an individual coming to me and that we're meeting. And that's been like the really helpful thing in parenting. And then taking that to other relationships, I think, is the learning that speaking with Thomas, that it kind of awakens this type of work. How can you remember that? It's the meeting the other and not my expectation or my desire. If that is, I think that's the continued learning for me.
Thank you. That's beautiful. It really leads back to this forming of our individuality, right, of how it is that we develop that for and with one another in that beautiful paradox. There's a saying, it comes from Gudrun Ruth Hughes. She wrote once, "I can use my selfhood to understand yours." And for me, that lives inherently in biography work, where we begin to understand how our individualities, what we have to do with one another. When it's really wonderful listening that you're talking about, Brad, it seems like, yeah. So our time is winding down. I appreciate those of you who have jumped in and shared something. This is a bit of a challenge, I think, to speak, especially intimately, without without seeing one another's faces. Hearing your voices is very special for me. I thought I'd end just really quickly with an idea that you could take forward, if you'd care to, with your own, working with your own biography out of just these three brief moments that we've met, when I was 21, when I was 28, and then a birth moment of a relationship with someone who's important to you. If you would care to live with the pictures that you've, now that you have in your inner imagination, as Corey pointed to, live with them over time, perhaps overnight tonight, into the day tomorrow, without trying to figure them out, without much ado, just that they're there present with you. And then, again, I'm sure some of you are familiar with it, they may speak to you in a certain way, that there may be another insight that comes or a connection that you can make with them just in having visited with them today. So thank you. All I can say is thanks for having me. Thanks for this opportunity to meet with you, and I hope it's helpful in some way. I hope it's meaningful, and I look forward to meeting some, if not all of you, in November. Thanks, Thea.
Yeah, and just a couple more comments as we conclude. Thank you so much, Leah, for guiding us through this call. And as we did with the last call, we'd love to hear from all of you how this call was for you, what worked and what didn't. And so I'll be sending an email with a survey asking for just some quick feedback from you, and that's really helpful to us as we continue to plan. And we also heard from some people after the last call that they wanted to be able to continue the conversations with others who participated. And so to help facilitate that, if you're interested in continuing talking about this topic with other people, either via email or phone, please press 1 on your dial pad. And if you're not interested or don't feel like you have the time, you could just press 2. And I'll just email a list of all the people who pressed 1 to each other, and then you guys can get in contact with each other if you want to. So I'll just give people a few moments to do that. Just press 1 if you're interested in continuing the conversation, then 2 if you'd rather not. And you're also welcome to call or email any of us on the leadership team with any thoughts that you have. I hope that you'll be able to join us for our next call on October 2nd with Jonathan Code, and also hope that you'll all come to the conference November 13th and 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. So thanks so much, everyone, for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.